cleans up really nice.
Oh my god.
Yeah.
He is the C-3PO of this scene. I'm like, you shiny b-.
You know, take this as a remembrance of me, but take this as like a way of protecting you.
Yes. And I think we see that in just a second.
Right. So next morning, it's just Finn Rizzell and Willow in front of this castle. And
yes, they
and Willow's like, oh, I'm so scared right now. And she's like, that's OK. Pep talk. There you go.
Oh, and it's a beautiful speech between them two. And if you're going to watch this movie, watch it and enjoy that part. But like the part that I found most endearing, other than the fact that she was like, you are the powerful, blah, blah, blah. She goes something akin to, any way that we move forward from this moment, you have done well and your children will look back and admire you for the courage that you've shown. Right.
Right.
Something like that.
Yeah.
And he reaches down to his belt and he touches the lock from his wife. And you see him have this, I'm in love and there's this bigger thing I have to do. But that doesn't mean I'm losing any less, mm-hmm. that I love any less. It's just that I've committed to this thing I have to do.
Right. Yeah.
Right. It's beautiful. It's more important than whatever the heck Finn Rizzell says.
Right. So they go ahead and they say, we're powerful sorcerers. And they say things like, we fought in your general directions. And your mother was a hamster and your father smelt of elderberries. And they're like,
nothing like getting mocked from a balcony on a turret or whatever.
And so the soldiers from inside the castle open up the gates and they come trotting out.
Yeah, they sent like half a dozen guys to go slaughter this old lady and this Nelfling.
No one.
Never get it right. This old lady and this no one, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then what happens is these tents that have been downed in the night, mm-hmm. now all of the, okay, as much as I hated the horses being flung to the ground in the last film that mm-hmm. we did, all of the horses standing up and being like, yo, we here and we good. Mm-hmm. I was like, ha,
yeah.
And now you've got 3, 4, 5 dozen horses. Like, it's a pretty big battalion, right? Mm-hmm. Coming at them. And then the brownies, the two little brownies hop up from Wonder One helmet and they're like, ah, we are helping here. Ah. And they're all running head first. The baddies are like, whoop, nope. And they like turn tail real fast because there's only like 6 of them.
Right. But they can't really get back because the army that was outside the castle, they're on horses. So they can like gallop into the castle before the soldiers
there's
on the outside. Yeah.
Yeah. They've come across the drawbridge.
Right. So they can't really bring that up until the horses get over there. And so like when the soldiers that were out of the castle come back in. So it's this full on battle. Mm-hmm. You see everybody kind of like coming in, and I think it cuts to Bav Morda and she's, you know, having like her ritual going on and being like, just continue with the ritual. And she sends Spinach Guy out.
Kale.
And so he.
Huh?
Kale.
So stupid. I appreciate it, though. Yeah. I love you, honey.
So battle ensues, and my next note is a lady wizard battle, which I loved because like, what is it? It's Willow, Finn Rizzell, and Sorsha. Sorsha's like leading them up into where her mother's chamber is. And she's like, mother, you need to stop this. Don't kill that baby for some reason.
Also, Fenrail gives Willow a chance to go home. She's like, you really don't have to do this. You can leave right now if you want to. You've mm-hmm. done a lot.
Yeah.
And he's all like, no, I'm going to, I got it. There's a baby.
Yeah.
I got to. Not have that happen. Yes. So now, they do stomp in. Every time the brownies accomplish something, I think at one point they like set off a giant arrow shooting gun and they do a little dance. And I feel like we should celebrate each other the way that the brownies celebrate every tiny accomplishment they do, because their tiny accomplishments are giant for them.
Mm-hmm.
They're like, I kicked that thing over. I hit that guy in the head. That guy got clocked in the nards. Awesome. And then they do a little dance. They feel really good. And we should be proud of ourselves like brownies. That's a takeaway. Enjoy that.
Yeah.
But also this next scene when the ladies come in, and it's all ladies all the way down, right?
Yeah. Like there's some very powerful women in this movie and I love it.
Yeah.
I'm here for it.
Yes. And I will say that this is the scene I entitled, Sisters Be Murderous Towards Theyselves.
Good. Yeah.
Yeah.
So and so Sorsha tells her mom to stop this, and like her mom just like picks her up and flings her over to this spike chain.
Yeah, but then Giselle stops her like just in time, and then she's like, "Oh, I can't smush her into the spikes like I wanted." And she just flings her to the ground where she's unconscious for a little while.
Right, and it goes back and forth between this battle with the old ladies and the battle down there with the Menzes.
Yes. And at one point, Evil Queen is on the ground and she pretends to be unconscious, just like her daughter did in the scene with Val Kilmer. Mm-hmm. And she's just like, ugh. And I'm like, just because you go, eh, does not mean you are dead. And like, she gets close and she like pokes her with the wand and she's like, and like sends the wand skittering that one way. And I was like, is that hereditary or did they kind of plan that out together?
I don't know.
It doesn't really matter. Because, okay, so now we've got Warwick trying to get to the baby behind all of these ladies fighting, right?
Right. And there's like one like magic spell that Bavmorda like shoots at this like, it looks like a metal ashtray on legs.
Yeah, I think of it as a cauldron.
Yeah.
But yes, exactly that. There are these random arcs of light coming from the wand. And they match the lightning that was like coming for the baby. And so we assume they're evil lightning, mm-hmm. which is fine. And then it makes this cauldron come to life. And did you see that what's inside is body parts?
Yeah.
So it's got like these skeleton hands that are like, lifting up. You don't know where to go to. Why don't you go where fashion sits?
But no. When the lid pops up, you see these like skeleton hands, like the hands are lifting it up. Yeah, it's great.
It's very Tim Burton, I thought. I was like, that's charming. I don't know. I wouldn't get rid of that.
Right.
I would put more of that in. Have everything dance around. Be like Return to Oz and have it be like.
Could you imagine if TikTok is just full of human bones?
Jen, you've discovered my secret. TikTok is full of human bones.
I mean, it would lend itself to the atmosphere of Return to Oz very well.
He's just like a coffee grinder, but for human bones.
Maybe it's just the Wheelers, because those things are creepy in and of itself. He just like chews them up, eats them for breakfast.
No.
Anyways, going back to this. So the important things to note at the battle under on the ground is that
it's sad.
Irk goes up against Kale.
Do it.
Do both of them?
Now.
Irk. Kale!
Eric!
Kale!
I hate it.
Okay.
Right.
Me too.
And Eric gets killed by.
He gets stabbed to Maru.
Right. And then that's when Mad Mardigan comes in and he's like fighting Kale.
Yeah, but no, he goes to Eric's side and Eric says the worst thing I've ever heard. Not like, say goodbye to my mother for me. Or, you're not as much of a douchebag as I thought you were. He goes, win this war for me. And Mad is like, okay.
Yeah, and so he fights Kale, and Kale goes down after, like, a few, like, solid hits to his gut.
He smashes his face, and he's halfway down, and all of a sudden you hear a scream from the tower that we don't know who did it. Mm-hmm. It was like, ah! And Matt is like, somebody getting hurt up in the tower where all the murdering is supposed to be happening? Okay, so then it cuts back up to the tower. We still don't know who screamed, right? But,
Bavmorda?
I said, mood is Giselle straight up punching the evil queen in the face. She's just hitting her full fist in the face. No magic. Mm-hmm. She's just like, two or three times. Like, it's a bloody nose. And I'm like,
I mean, doesn't have a very high AC, you know, probably doesn't have a lot of hit points.
I mean, maybe she's not good for melee damage.
No, she's not. She's a magic user.
Yeah. Bite it, evil queen. Bite it.
I also like it when she's spinning Bavmorda. It's almost like this Three Stooges bit or something like that.
It's a real physical comedy sort of moment. Yeah. And you know what? As opposed to a lot of things that terrified me as a child, I was not scared of this scene. And I liked that because that meant I could rewatch it. Because what would happen is I'd watch something scary and it would stick in my brain, like the weird Python scary hiss thing from Howard the Duck, and I couldn't watch it again because it was just too much. I was like, oh, no, why would I put myself through that? And I am one inclined to not put myself through pain I've already experienced. So, like, this was genius. Like, this was really good. This had all of the whole family involved. Like, there was just enough violence you could be like, yeah, whack-a-mole, right? But it was just enough funny you could be like, but then there was that doot-doot-doot-doot-doot-doot-doot cauldron moment. Yeah. And then there was, like, that part where that evil lady was getting punched in the face by that other old lady. Fantastic.
Also, Finn Rizzell is, like, cackling at some points as she's doing it. She's like, ah. And so it like sounds kind of evil, but you know she's a good guy.
Yeah.
So it kind of mitigates that.
Yes.
Yeah. And so back down with Kale and Mad Mardigan. Mad Mardigan like, you know, stabs him a few different times. And then he Kale's not going down because he's super beefy. And then Mad Mardigan has to like step on a sword and then thrust Kale on the sword. And that's what finally takes him out.
Yes. Dual swords. Then he kicks him off the side, losing two swords. And we know how I feel about losing swords, but like also screw that guy.
Right. And so back up at the top of the tower, that's when Bav Morda finally gets the upper hand with Rizel. And like
she's trapped under a rock and she doesn't have her wand anymore.
Right. And so, and Willow's like has Allura in his hands.
Who are you?
Right.
And he says,
he's like, I'm a powerful sorcerer. And he goes for the other like acorn thing and throws it at her and she grabs it. It's supposed to turn her to stone.
Her arm, her hand turns to stone-ish and there's these cool like granite cracks down her arm.
Yeah.
And as a kid, I was like, yeah, I got her. Right.
Yeah.
And then she's like, and she's like,
yeah.
And then the hand goes back to normal and then she pours the dust from her fingers and I'm like,
oh no.
Well, and like
as of kid me is yeah. like that.
Yeah. And like for
kid me is there right now. Yeah. It's like, oh no.
And for me, it was like this was gonna work. Like you could see her struggling yeah. with trying to fight against yeah. it.
And then when she mastered it, you were like, that was the big powerful thing that his sorcerer friend gave him. It was supposed to be the thing that helped. This is the terror.
Right.
The terror. The sheer terror.
And she like throws lightning from her hand and he like dives with Allura in hand. Mm-hmm. And then he like comes out from behind that rock. And because of the fact that she already doesn't think that he's that powerful because she's just like taking him out or taking his stone thing out, she's like, put her back on the pedestal. And all we see is him holding, you know, the baby. And so he like is gonna try for it
uh-huh.
and then he's like no and she's like what and she's like I'm gonna go ahead and cast her to a dimension where evil cannot harm her and she's
she says I'm gonna cast her. What is she gonna cast her?
Okay, so Bav Morda is gonna cast her to the netherworld so she can absorb her power.
Uh-huh.
But Willow's like, I'm going to cast her to a dimension where evil cannot get to her.
Yeah, he stutters on it and she's like, bullshit. And he's yeah. like, oh yeah, well, and then he throws all of these special magic sounding words.
Mm-hmm.
And she's like, the hell you say? And he's like, thippity flappity, no baby here, buddy.
Yeah.
I'm sure there's some way cooler yeah. to say that.
Yeah, he pretty much does his magic trick with the little pig at the very beginning.
Yeah, and so thwomp, there's right. nothing in her hand, his hands. There's just he goes whoosh, big flourish,
mm-hmm.
blanket
on nothing. The ground.
Yeah, nothing in his hands. And
did you notice how his he pretended that his arm hurt like it was yes. happening when he was yeah. using
oh,
the wand?
I'm so glad you said that because I was like, what the f- does disappeared carpal tunnel mean? Because, applauders, every time he's cast the spell, the magic he's mostly done is trying to turn Finn Rizel back into a human. And every time he's been done, he has this huge cramp in his wand hand and he falls to the ground. Like, it happens 3 times. And so, like, when he casts the baby disappearing spell and he falls to the ground, we're all like, oh,
mm-hmm.
And so you're like, oh no.
But okay, so
oh,
like
so she goes around and she's just like, how dare you? Yeah, zippity zappity bippity boo.
She goes ahead and knocks over this like potion of stuff that was for the baby.
Uh-huh.
And then it like, you know, she's like got her arms up and then like the lightning grabs hits her arm and like all of the potion that was for the baby starts like swirling around.
So
her.
She's zapped with blue lightning, she's encompassed in this maroon smoke, and I'm just all like, mm-hmm. careful with your lightning is all I'm saying.
Mm-hmm. Right. Also, be careful with your magic spells.
Yeah.
So that's when everybody, like, Sorsha wakes up and Finn Rizel gets out from underneath the rocks.
Uh-huh.
And then she's like, well, where did you put Allura? And he's like, oh, it's just my old trick with the pig.
And then she's like, oh, wonderful. And I was like, oh, there was just enough action in this film that every time that trick happened, I forgot.
Right.
When I was little, like mm-hmm. before, like even like 99,
mm-hmm.
anytime below high school, I would watch this film and I'd be like, huh, what? Oh.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Every time. And it made me feel dumb, but it also made me feel like, you know what? The dumb thing's the thing that won the day, though. So.
But like, when I was watching it, doing the notes for all of this, I was like, it's still so easy to kind of like let yourself forget because not just because of everything that kind of comes through.
Such succession. Just
right. It's also like kind of like played up as a joke in the beginning, but you need something to work now. So it makes sense that he would do it. It would kind of be functional right now. But it's so like that we need something real powerful and real important. And the stone thing didn't work. How is anything else going to be able to work? And it's just some misdirection. Misdirect, because that's what all magic is in our or illusionary magic in our world.
All right, look, I'm super down.
Yeah.
Okay. So now, like, ha ha ha, win the day. Now we're back to the Star Wars award ceremony from which Star Wars was it? Where everybody gets awards and
it was
except for Chewie. That's episode 4.
Yeah.
Chewie doesn't get an award.
Chewie doesn't get an award.
Well, you. He must have gotten a book. My notes are like, save the world gets a book.
Okay.
Except Val Kilmer in this scene.
Yeah, he cleans up really nice.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
He is the C-3PO of this scene. I'm like, you shiny.
Right. And so he gets put onto, he I think they like lift him up and put him onto a tiny pony.
Yeah, but like in a not terribly insulting way.
Right.
But so. Kind of. I don't think little persons want to be picked up at all.
Right. So they put him onto his pony and then he goes riding back and then it cuts back to him being in the town and they're like, Willow's back. Yay, Willow's back.
Before we do this, are the brownies celebrating at the main square too?
Yeah, and the one with the mouse hat takes his hat off and then the lion guy is like, what? Because the mouse hat guy has no hair on his head.
He has like a full
he's got that like rim of hair around the side of his head.
It's a fully grown out Picard is what I call it, like where you're just bald on top and you got this beautiful rim around the rest of your head. Full Picard. And you haven't seen it because he's managed to maintain his mouse hat the entire time. And when the dude does a double take, they never mention it with any words, but you're like, he didn't know his best friend was bald. That's awesome.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Like, I want best friends who don't know I'm bald, but then when they find out, they're like, okay.
It's like, that is the story of Ron Howard to me.
that's true. Under his baseball cap, he's shiny.
Yeah.
Good for you. I don't mind. Look, that's a sign of high testosterone as far as I'm concerned. And boys and girls, that's just fine. Mm-hmm. Just means you're powerful.
Mm-hmm.
Like a mouse killer.
Yeah.
Except for those rat dreams you keep having. You and your rat dreams, he said earlier in the film and we didn't mention.
Because there's a lot in this film and we can't cover everything. Watch it.
Okay, so... Oh, so he rides into town. Everything you said happens, right? Mm-hmm. Everybody's like, Widow's back, Widow's back. Everybody runs and meets him. And like, he's fully like encapsulated by people. But then like, the sorcerer comes up to him and he's like, hey, how are you doing? Like they touch hands. There's a little word exchange. It doesn't matter. He doesn't offer him the book, which I wouldn't do because I bet that book has way more magic in it than that sorcerer has over himself. But he pulls out an apple and he's like, hey, look at this apple.
Yeah.
Sorcerer's like, yeah, that's a nice apple. All right. He goes, huh? Watch this apple. He throws it up in the air like the sorcerer had done with the rock at the beginning of his epic Homer's tale.
Yeah.
It turns into a dove. And then as opposed to indicating the direction that they're supposed to go, it flies that away. It doesn't matter.
Yeah.
And it on the face of Brunkle dude.
Burgle cut. That's right. That's when he got shat on.
Right on his face. I believe, if I'm not mistaken, his mouth was open.
Yeah, it was. I'd like to think that it was like, you know, some tasty food, like maybe some porridge or something.
You mean like for stage?
Yeah.
As opposed to the bird who was like, I better eat all of this delicious porridge so that I can make a profound poop for this man.
Talking about the practical effect, they threw something on him. And I'd like it to be like some delicious porridge.
I don't care.
Anyways, so and then Willow sees his wife and his bobbins, and he goes running towards them.
The way he says Kaya,
mm-hmm.
The way that Warwick Davis's voice says Kaya,
mm-hmm.
In that like I'm very young and I'm very in love, and he just runs and he says her name over and over again. Like it is ingrained on my heart.
Mm-hmm.
I love that.
the way he says it, the way he loves her, the way their romance does not falter. She cut her hair for him. And oh, her hair is down because she doesn't have as much to like pin up and braid like she did before.
Mm-hmm.
And you're like,
yeah.
Yes. And then to this movie's credit, they don't draw it out.
Mm-hmm.
He hugs both. He hugs his wife. He loves her. Mm-hmm. He hugs each of his babies. End of film.
Yeah.
Gorgeous. And it's not a full fade to black. It's a fade to...
Credits roll over the last of the shot.
Yeah, the recede out of the little town they live in with their little rounded hovels. And then like a wider, maybe like a forest shot. And then like we scroll for a while before we go to black credits. And that's like gorgeous. And like, did you see how many stunt doubles were in the credits?
Yeah,
like
lots.
Like a full screen.
Yeah.
Maybe two. I don't know. Mm-hmm. It's crazy.
Yeah.
Applauders. I can't believe we just got through the entire plot of Willow in less than 8 hours. I'm sorry, Jen.
Technically, it's been like 4 hours. Actually, it's been like 4 hours.
Okay, okay, okay. But then we can share our shocks and applauds. We don't mm-hmm. have to draw it out because
right.
at least for once we're not talking about like bad racial things.
Yeah.
Probably not. Maybe unless y'all are, I don't know.
Mm.
I went easy on my shocks and applauds this week.
Yeah,
there were. I love this movie so much.
Right.
So I don't remember who went first last time, and I can't remember if we went shocked and applaud or applaud and shocked.
I think we did shocked. We generally do shocked first. So you seem ready. So whichever one you want to start with.
My shocked moment is that like 3/4 of the way through the film, I went, hey, wait, Jen, did this movie just pass the Bechdel-Myers test? And Jen was like, yeah, yeah, it did. Because two named ladies were in a conversation about another lady that had nothing to do with a dude.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, I'm genuinely shocked. Genuinely. Like, I just, like, wow. I mean, like, good for this.
The forces of good and evil came together at the end, too, with the two sorceresses. So they're, I mean, even though they didn't really have a conversation, per se, they that conflict is kind of standout in that there was this very strong concept of who's going to win, and it was reliant on these two.
But you didn't feel like Warwick came in and saved the day for them?
I feel like he came in at the last second, but he wasn't the quote unquote most powerful in the scene. There were other more powerful beings in the scene, and I feel like he was the underestimated force that kind of came in, and he wasn't so powerful. Like when Bev Morta catches the stone and she's like worried about her hand, like I feel like part of Willow's power is in when he throws the stone and he's like wanting the stone to actually work. It's like that's like his power. Like the reason why she's fighting against it so much is because of the fact that Willow, she's not just fighting the power of the stone, she's fighting Willow's confidence in himself.
Oh,
right. So, but he's still not so powerful. Like if Finn Rizzell threw it, mm-hmm. then she would probably have been able to go ahead and like actually fight against Bav Morda if it was just like a power of wills at that point.
Oh, that makes yeah. a lot of sense. But still, like super powerful ladies.
Yeah.
Throughout this entire film.
Old ladies.
Unapologetic ladies.
Yeah. But they're like, these are not young, beautiful women. These are still like, they're powerful. They're older. Huh. And they're like, they're still like, you don't want them.
Yeah. And they're like, as far as like, as fast as this plot moved, they were as fleshed out as you could probably get in 2 hours.
Right.
And that was my shock moment. I was just like, oh, that is refreshing. That is like a cold water to the face. Thank you. Thank you so much. As an older woman rewatching the movie, I was like, yeah, thanks. Freaking A. All right. Who's next? Shock, 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 shock.
I don't know. I need a moment.
Okay. Well, my shocked moment was not nearly as kind as yours. It was how Sorsha was handled in this movie. And it's mostly because of the fact that we don't really see like her interaction with anybody outside of like, you know, everybody else around her. Like we see her with her mom and her mom obviously trusts her.
Mm-hmm.
But we don't see anything that would be appealing to like I think about the fact that like if you like Bav Morda is probably not like the best mom.
Oh no.
Right. But she still says outside of like her daughter being present, I trust my daughter more than I trust my seer. And she says that to her seer.
Mm-hmm.
And like, even though she still like kind of puts her daughter down in public slightly, you could very easily claim that as like, oh, she's just really tense about everything. Because her daughter is still like, we need to find this baby for my mom and we need to do this and it's for my mom. And like, I don't know, like it just feels like Sorsha was, I don't want to say that she really affects the, like if you took her out of the plot, I don't think that she would have really affected much. To me, she kind of feel like maybe that's just me. Like she affects some of the characters, but when it comes to the plot, she doesn't. She's kind of like a sexy lamp. Like if you took her out, what do you lose plot wise?
I think the only thing you'd really lose is their access or navigation of the castle at the end.
Right.
Possibly them regaining the baby via the sexy no kissy kiss tent scene. And then they do kiss.
Yeah.
But like I get it. If she was a scarf that had some of the same meanings, like it wouldn't really matter.
Right.
But she's not, she's not my favorite female character.
Right. And like, I think that there's a lot of potential in Sorsha. Like if this was like, okay, so for the TV that they're doing, if they're doing a full on reboot mm-hmm. and they're going to be able to expand on characters, I would want them to expand on Sorsha
mm-hmm.
A lot. Mostly because it's like, to me, she seems like the movie is trying to say she's super integral to the plot, but I don't see that happening.
Yeah, I think I really look forward to seeing if they can do something more substantial with her.
If they're rebooting the movie into a TV series.
Yeah, other than that, she's just the pretty girl I want to be who gets to make out with the one time Val Kilmer's hot.
Oh, yeah. Great hair, by the way.
Her hair?
Her hair, yeah.
Mm, disagree.
Really?
Yeah.
I like the curls, the frizziness.
I like the curls. The layers are bad.
Okay. That's fair. It was the 80s.
Yeah, that's true. Hey, Jen, what's your shocked moment?
I think the movie went on just a little bit too long. Maybe this is me thinking about as a kid watching this movie, but 2 hours for this kind of movie seems a little bit right now, but movies didn't need to be that long back then.
Yeah, kid movies over an hour and a half tend to be a little wasted.
So I feel like if they were going to do anything, the battle at Terezlin with the trolls and the dragon, I feel like that scene was just there so that ILM could shine. You know,
you could have gotten rid of two of the trolls, just one of the trolls, and turned the two trolls into the dragon. I don't really care, but you're right. You could have cut probably 7 to 10 minutes out of the film just from that section, probably.
Yeah, or you could have just had like an ambush at Terezlin because it was already taken over.
Mm.
Like the fact that like she's turned everybody to stone and then there was like no one else left over, even though she technically claimed that as her land. You know, she overtook it. She could have had like a nice little like ambush
mm-hmm.
and then they could have like taken it did not need to be there. But I like it makes sense that they would have made that for the special effects. Like we're going to give this a little place for the special effects.
Industrial Light and Magic does deserve a place to shine, especially in this film, I think more than anything. At this period, like, yeah, I'm super down. But like, yeah, I think you both have valid points about that.
Mm-hmm.
Terezlin also was originally going to have a scene where Sorsha meets her dad, who has been turned to stone, and somehow they unstonify him.
Partway?
I guess. Enough just for him to be able to say, you got to follow Willow on this one and not listen to your egomaniacal...
Bat crazy, you might say.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mother.
Yeah.
So if you're going to cut that and just have Sorsha sort of be this thing where it's like, oh, well, I guess, you know, my life choices up to this point have been absolutely wrong, every single one of them. And in the course of a day and a half, I'm going to completely change my behavior. Then
plus
sure.
Also, that mad dog is pretty hot.
It cleans up really well.
Once he brushed his teeth, remember?
Yeah.
He brushes his teeth from like when he's in the cage. Gross.
So I would cut it a little bit, make it a little bit shorter.
You know what I would not cut as my applaud moment? I don't know how strong do you feel your applaud moment is?
I mean, let's go with you. You had a really nice tangent into it. So let's go with your tangent.
I don't have a tangent.
No, it was a good, like,
mine's
like
one word.
Jen specifically said the one thing that I would cut would probably be da 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 da. And you were like, you know, the one thing I wouldn't cut. That's a good tangent.
Oh, okay. My applaud moment is the scale. Whereas when we watched Cats, it was abhorrent. Like cats to humans, cats to loaves of bread, necklaces, earrings, bracelets. That's not what a watch looks like. I will put a watch on my cat and you will see how wrong the scale is. Like just terrible. The scale in this movie was gorgeous. 100%. tip to tail all the way through. Mm-hmm. And I mean, from the fairies compared to the Nelflung.
Nelwyn.
My God, it's been hours. Nelwyn, the fairy, like the queen fairy who was just huge. And then also she was like, and another thing. And she came in twice as big on purpose. Like the fact that that the interactions between the Dakini mm-hmm. and the Nelwyns. was like it seemed proportional. I feel like it wasn't, I didn't feel like the little people were belittled set wise or anything like that, like especially within their own village everything was beautifully scaled to the size of the people. Like if you're building your own house, you're gonna make it fit you, you know, and that was really pleasing. Like, and as a child, I never noticed it, but I was like, oh, that's very nice. And then as he went out into the larger world, so to speak, like that he had a whole bunch of different hurdles to deal with. It was glorious, like all the way through. And I mean, in a lot of movies where I find a lot of fault with things like that, this movie stands up how many years later?
Mm-hmm.
Don't put a number on it. It hurts. Okay. Well, that's not too bad. But 33 years later, I'm still looking at this and not mad about. And also, as a little side note on the fact that how much I love the scale in this movie, the little details, like the animation of the human mouths, it's all the industrial light and magic stuff, like the shadows on the brownies from mm-hmm. the green screen, we assume, like they look great. I'm sure they were hand painted. They were good. They must have taken the original shadows and put them in there, or if not, had a real artist's eye in putting them all together. And I was like, yes, yes, between scale and animation and making it all look together. Like you look at, like even our last film, like the CGI is not unappreciated. It just has that kind of uncanny valley, white line, glitchy stuff that makes you not believe it. Mm-hmm. And that's not here. That's not in this movie.
Right. They used as many practical effects as they could. And like when you're scaling on a green screen, it's like you're still using a human being.
Yeah. And then as they integrated it, they didn't leave out adjusting shadows, and they didn't leave out making sure that like when as a stupid little detail, right at the end of the carriage freak out scene, the two brownies, one drunk, one not so drunk, fall out of the end of the wagon. Well, the wagon rolls back a little bit mm-hmm. and they go under it, and you see them, they go from being in the sunshine to being in a shadow,
right,
but not squished or anything, but the light changes just right, and I'm like,
yeah,
like it makes, like it is art to make one weep how good that is,
right?
That's how I feel.
Good.
I love it. That's my applaud.
Jen, do you want to go?
Is it my turn?
It doesn't matter whose turn it is, because it's one of you two.
I applaud Mr. Warwick Davis above all things in this movie. I don't think that this movie would have been anywhere as good if you had inserted just about anybody else into that role. It was also very nice to see some of the supporting cast within that village, some of those recurring actors that unfortunately they just kind of, there's just like a small group of them that that got inserted into those movies when possible. So like I really could recognize like half of the band of guys in Time Bandits in this, including Mr. Kenny Baker.
Kenny Baker!
Who has a speaking line. But even above all of that, there's something really unique about the bubbly personality of Warwick Davis. Mm. His like childlike wonder, the way that he looks at everything. And that, like you said, Naomi, the relationship between Willow and Kaya, you only have a couple of minutes to see them together, and yet you get this feeling that they've known and loved each other for several years. And especially considering how young Warwick was when he did this role, that's pretty cool. I mean, his range was pretty cool at that age. And then to be able to carry really the weight of the whole story like that at just 18 is pretty cool.
Could imagine some 18-year-old schmuck off of Disney Channel, no disrespect, coming through and giving that level of performance.
Could not happen.
Mm-mm. Fresh from Wizards of Waverly Place. Nope.
Well, I don't know any actors from there. I mean, as far as acting range goes, he goes through the entire gambit of emotions. And like he goes through like, you know, I'm like, you know, like, oh, I gotta go and see what my kids are talking about. And then I gotta go over here and, you know, deal with my landlord. And then I gotta go over here. And, you know, you see just this wide range of emotions that, you know, he puts into the character. Mm-hmm. And he has like the character of Willow has to go through a lot. He like has to get shuffled out of his village. He's like, I care about this kid. And I gotta, you know, get that taken care of. And like, you feel that. He's like, when he stops and thinks about when High Alduin is, you know, like, do you have any love for this child? He stops and thinks about it. He doesn't answer right away. And he's like, yeah, I do.
Because the bones don't speak for him. His heart speaks for him.
Right. Really good job.
Makes me want to cry.
Have we all said our...
No.
No.
Waiting on Lydia's.
My plot moment is the world building. It just feels effortless as... Like, there are names that get thrown around here. And, like, you can... Even if you can't necessarily remember what those names are specifically...
My terrible ass cannot.
But you do remember the meaning behind it. You know that like a... is a giant person and a... is a small person. It's an epic fantasy movie,
mm-hmm.
and there's so much that goes on. There's a lot of plot points that you have to get through, but it feels like it's all woven together.
As opposed to 13th Warrior, where it was like, and ka-chunk, and yeah. ka-chunk, and ka-chunk.
Right. And there weren't nearly as many plot beats in 13th Warrior as there was in Willow.
Yeah.
Yeah. And those felt more like a paint by numbers, where Willow feels like an entire painting by Vincent van Gogh.
Oh, Van Gogh, go.
Yeah.
Nice callback.
Yeah.
But I 100%, I'm with you in that. I think world building in general is hard, but I feel like Ron Howard is good at it.
Right.
He must got a lot of marbles rattling for that business, you think?
Right.
Man, favorite part of the world building of this world. What's your favorite part of the world? Because for me, it's got to be... And this might be the cottagecore in me, but like mm-hmm. the intricacies of the Nelwyn's.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
All right. The Nelwyn's town is just like, it's tiny and intricate and it makes a lot of sense. And then when they're doing their festival, like they have all of these little things and it wasn't like, and now you're going to do this funny thing because you're a little person, right? Mm-hmm. Which is demeaning and stupid. They were like, here's a bunch of stuff people used to do in medieval whatevers and we want you to do it and there you go. And then they did it and it was funny because it's always funny or enjoyable. You're sitting over there, you're drinking mead with your friends, do that. As opposed to like sticking a small person in a barrel and acting like that was some sort of novel concept that right. someone 4 feet tall can fit in a cask. Like, mm-hmm. you know, don't be dumb. They did that with a brownie. That was funny.
Yeah.
But not with a little person. That wouldn't be funny.
Right.
Although it did serve a point in The Lord of the Rings.
In The Hobbit,
I mean.
Yeah. But still, I mean, the people in The Hobbit, they were dwarves, but they weren't little people. So my favorite part of the world building is how all of these different groups kind of interact. Like you hear about like brownies are considered pests in this world.
Oh, you're infested with brownies.
Oh, I hate brownies. They're so gross. And it was just sort of like, so's your accent, lady. But it's still like, you know, like nobody has any real respect for a Nelwyn to the point where like the general term is peck and it's still like it feels derogatory, even though it does not exist in this world, but in our world. But it's still like the way that it's mostly the interactions. They feel very, very realistic. Even like when Eric comes over and sees Mad Mardigan in the cage and Mad Mardigan's like, you gotta let me out of here. I can totally do this with a sword. And like, he's just like, no, I'm a nationalist. You don't have any allegiance. And he's just like, suffer and die. But it's like, I mean, even though like that to me seems like incredibly relatable. Like you see that in our political spectrum. Anyways.
What's your favorite part of the world building, Jen?
I had mentioned before I liked how the fantastical creatures that they do encounter were kind of mentioned up front by the kids.
Yes. Are you afraid of the fairies who will make you go to sleep for 100 years? Are you scared of brownies? Are you scared of dragons? You're scared of trolls?
I hate trolls. That was another challenge for Warwick is he was having a real challenge with the accent, getting a non-British accent for this role.
Was that a non-British?
It was as close as Warwick could get at that time. He really wanted to remove the Britishness sound of it.
Well, he didn't sound like Cockneyed or anything like that.
He also had, I mean, other real big challenges like riding horses or any of that stuff that if you're young, you haven't really been trained in everything. But just the creature building is definitely there and it was good.
Applauders, you have joined us for the entire month of June.
Halfway through July and one special weekend in August.
And I'm just grateful that you guys are here constantly listening, even though we ramble on a lot longer than we have to. You should check us out on our social medias like Twitter and Facebook. And at any point, feel free to drop us a line or drop us a donation on our Patreon.
That's right. You can find our link to our Patreon on shockedandapplaud.com. It's the little heart icon at the top. And it's not just a donation. It really is, number one, a way for us to continue on in the knowledge that somebody out there wants this to continue. We do this commercial free. We put in hours and hours and hours into it, and we do it because we love what we do and we love the people that listen to it. The $1 a month does get you access to our non-bleeped episodes.
Could you imagine hearing me say and like guzzle? And could you imagine if I didn't like get bleeped every time I was like or like I don't know, like at the end of recording I have a hard time coming up with colorful expletives.
Butts and boobs.
We are coming up really close to our 100th release.
I don't think we've bleeped either of those, Lydia.
So we're coming up to our 100th release of, you know, we really do break out these 26 episodes in as short amount of time as we possibly can. We do a lot of cutting, but not really a lot of editing. I'll say that. And we also are coming up to our 4,000th download. So we're hitting a couple of milestones. In August, we'll also be hitting our third year doing this. So this is a good place for us to end. Until next month, this is Jen McQuaid.
This is Naomi McQuaid.
And this is Lydia Malcolm.
And this is Shocked and Applaud. Thank you so much for listening.
Congratulations, Applauder. You've now concluded our epic four-part walkthrough of Ron Howard's 1988 classic fantasy film, Willow. We hope you've enjoyed our journey through the plot, various conversational side quests, as well as our shocked and applaudable moments. Looking for more classic movie discussions until we return next month? Screenplay Rewind just released their episode discussing the Spielberg and Lucas movie Indiana Jones and the Raiders of the Lost Ark. And All 80s Movie Podcast now has an episode discussing 1981's Dragon Slayer. Check out this week's description for links to these great shows. Hey, this is your audio engineer and FinRizzell's finalist final form, Jen. Did you know that leaving a review of Shocked and Applaud is one of the best ways of sharing our show with others? Every rating we receive on Apple Podcasts and Podchaser.com contributes to us being lifted in search results. Why not take the time now when your hands are free to rate us or leave a review? We'll be taking a short break and we'll return to you with another amazing film walkthrough July 13th. We'll be staying in the rad decade of the 80s with one of our all-time favorite comedies. From Shocked and Applaud, thank you for patroning the peculiar.
Yay!
Epic Star Wars music.
Willow!
Eric!
Eric!
Kale!
Kaya!
Thank you.